very warm welcome to everyone to tonight's meeting. And thank you to the residents who have taken their time to attend. As a reminder, in order for me to conduct an orderly meeting, my expectations are there is respectful silence when people are speaking. There should be no heckling or any form of disturbance. I will remind you that as the Mayor, when I speak, you will be required to listen and not attempt to speak over me. My ruling on standing orders is final, and members are expected to respect this. Failure to do so may result in me asking you to leave the meeting. Thank you. Now we will continue with tonight's business. Number one, minutes, council minutes on the 22nd of January 2020. Is it the wish of the council that I sign the minutes of the two council meetings held on the 22nd of January 2020 as an accurate record?
Very agree.
Thank you. Number two, apologies for absence. Are there any apologies for absence?
Madam Mayor, I have apologies for lateness from Councillor Coleman. No apologies for absence.
Thank you.
Mayor, apologies once again from Councillor Brocklebank Fowler, who's not quite fully recovered. And sincere apologies for lateness from Councillor Brown, who has run into horrific transport problems.
Thank you. Number three, Mayor announcement. Hitesh Jalaparo, our Strategic Director for Finance and Governance, will be leaving the Council after 10 years of service. On behalf of the Council, I wish you all the very best of luck in the future. I call upon the leader to say a few words.
I'm really very sorry about Hitesh Jalopra is. I have a friend called Hitesh Taylor, as you all know. That Hitesh Jalopra is leaving our employment. He has been one of the solid rocks that we've built our finances on and has been a crucial member of our team throughout the whole part of our time in office. The speech we're about to give later tonight, when we set out the achievements that have happened over the last 5 years, it's in very many ways, there is clear tone set by the politicians and the team that drive that, but that's nothing if you haven't got people who know their job and can get on side and can drive through the changes in the most professional way. Hitesh has not only taken part in the finance of the council, but he's led the structural change that's seen it move from an old-fashioned bureaucracy to the direction we wanted to head in, a modern, cutting-edge business. And there's all sorts of things I like about Hitesh. He speaks three languages. His third language, actually, is English. So we're going to hear tonight some speeches where people's first language is in English. And they would not be as good as Hitesh's. Handshakefulness is one of his big strengths. In essence, what Hitesh has done over time he's been here is to be a key advisor. All politicians need that clear advice and that professional scrutiny, and Hitesh has given that, not just identifying the problems that you can face, but coming up with some of those groundbreaking solutions anywhere in local government. I know Matt Schmidt will want to say a few words in a minute or two, immediately after me. But on a personal level, whether it's talking about our mutual love of growing chili plants, or whether it's just the fact that Hitesh has been a part of the team and a crucial member of what I think is the best senior leadership team in local government, then I will genuinely miss him. I'm genuinely sorry that he's leaving, and I will genuinely miss him. And I know people need to move on in life, but sometimes that bitter sweetness of feeling good for them to make that decision, but at the same time, the grief of losing someone as a crucial part of the team, I think will be all too present once he goes. So on behalf of everyone in this administration, and on behalf of everyone in your wonderful team, who I know adore you and admire your leadership, then I would genuinely like to wish you the best for the future and to reaffirm that you have some very good friends in Hammersmith and Fulham, and you will always be welcome back. Thank you very much, Hitesh.
Councillor Schmidt.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Yeah, it is with regret that I rise today to wish Hitesh all the best in whatever he does next. For the past 6 years, he's been an absolutely invaluable member of the team of officers who've supported this administration. We obviously see him most in context of finance, and he's helped us not only make the savings that we made, but keep council tax at the third lowest in the country. In capital, where we end up talking less, but is actually in some ways more transformative in the way that we've gone from a council that sells off assets to one that's now building a civic campus for residents to use. Hitesh has been instrumental at making sure that as a council we were able to build the civic campus in a way that enhances our overall assets rather than degrades them. Hitesh has also handled things that lesser people would have been blown off course by. I don't think we can underestimate just how challenging for a professional finance director the BT managed services fiasco was. Not wanting to make political points, I think you'd find councillors in other administrations who'd say the same thing, but that had every prospect of bringing down the finance of this council, making us unable to pay vulnerable residents the money that they depend on, pay small businesses the money that they need to survive. But Hitesh made sure that every single person that we needed to pay, every single business that we needed to pay was paid, that our accounts were properly put together, and that we were then able to escape BT Managed Services eventually and escape it with a very good settlement to help us with our overall financial position. And your leadership in that was absolutely invaluable. Another challenge that he navigated was disaggregating from what was called the tri-borough. And he managed to bring us out without us putting any budget growth. Again, something that most other finance directors might have struggled with. Hitesh relished that as a challenge and has delivered it perfectly. But I think Hitesh would say the same thing. The biggest tribute we would pay to Hitesh wouldn't be all those accomplishments. It would be the team that he's built. Because at a time in local government, particularly in finance sectors, where people are always poaching each other and teams come and go constantly, our finance team has been incredibly stable. And people like Chris Harris and Andrew Lord, who are absolutely invaluable in us putting together our accounts and us putting together our budget and serving residents, they were there when Hitesh arrived, and they're there today, and they've excelled and grown. And most of the finance colleagues in the departments, people like Prakash and Tony, have been here for a long time, and many of them were first in line when they were asked in disaggregation, which council would you like to work for? They said, I would like to work for Hitesh in Hammersmith and Fulham, because he is one of our greatest managers. And he leaves us one other further human legacy in Emily Hill, who he recruited and who we have sort of full confidence in now to take forward the reins as Section 151 officer. So I think that is perhaps his greatest legacy, is the team that he's built that have remained loyal to him and have helped deliver all the financial successes that I mentioned before. So thank you so much, Hitesh. Thank you to your team for being loyal to you and for being well managed by you. And we look forward to hearing what you do next.
Thank you, Councillor. Any further speakers? Yes, Councillor Carmella.
Thank you, Mayor. On behalf of the opposition, can I just say that we share the deep sense of sadness that we as a council are losing an officer of the caliber of Hitesh. Hitesh has been here, I think, over 10 years now, and his behaviour as an officer, both when we were in administration and when we've been in opposition, has been exemplary. He's been one of the few officers, again, both in administration and in opposition, who has been prepared to tell us no when we wanted to do something or extract some information. He has displayed throughout the highest levels of independence, impartiality, and professionalism. And We will miss him. Councillor Cowan described Hitesh as a rock, and that is a sentiment which I personally can fully agree. I understand, Hitesh, that you are going to be taking a few months off, and I suggest, if I may, that you have made yourself available for meetings at unsociable hours whenever you have been asked, as again, both when we were in administration and when you're in opposition. Go and do something that you never planned to do. Go and enjoy yourself and have some me time. We will miss you, and if in 2 or 3 months' time you decide that actually you miss it here, I am sure you will be welcome back with open arms. Thank you again.
Thank you, Councillor. Any further speakers? Thank you. Item 4, declarations of interest. Are there any declarations of interest by councillors? No. I must advise members who are 2 months in arrears with their council tax payments cannot vote on the report relating to budget settings. Item 5, public question time. No public questions were submitted. Now we come to committee report 6.1, revenue budget and council tax levels 2020-2021. I call upon the leader to formally move the report and recommendations.
Formally moved.
Thank you. The agreed convention is that the leader of the council and the leader of the opposition have unlimited time to speak in this report. I call on the leader of the council, Councillor Stephen Cowan, to speak. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Madam Mayor. We meet tonight in February 2020 to approve an £8.3 million of new investment in key services for the residents of Hammersmith and Fulham. We meet to agree to freeze council charges in vital services such as children's and adult and housing, and at absolutely zero increase, which is a real terms cut, less than inflation. And we meet to set the council's own total net budget for 2020-2021 at £121,000,003. Now, many of us have been doing this for a very long time, and it's worth reflecting, as we turn the new decade, on the last 10 years. And indeed, in similar circumstances, in February 2010, we met in opposition on our side at that point to similarly meet, where at that point, the council's own total net expenditure budget was £184,345,000. It's a big difference, isn't it? £184 million down to £121 million. And back then, in February 2010, we met to agree a council tax that was £811.78 per Band D resident, and tonight it's lower at £792 per Band D resident. Now that's interesting, isn't it, after 10 years of austerity, that with less money, and as you will see in this speech, more services and better services, we have also delivered less council tax for the residents of this borough. And that is the fundamental objectives that drive this cost-cutting, hard-nosed, but compassionate Labour administration. Now, the decade of austerity has been austere in ways that could not be foretold. And whilst we have many wealthy residents in our borough, we have some of the poorest anywhere in Northern Europe. So we faced, over the last 10 years, real terms cuts of some £68 million. We've faced a 54% real terms reduction in our budget. And in 2015-16, when the government ended their incentive payments for us to freeze or cut council tax, we've only been able to do that in our first term and to keep the council tax lower than inflation in our second term because of the hard and clever work of Hitesh Jalopra, the amazing finance team he has with Emily Hill, and indeed the wonderful cabinet member for finance, the one and only Mike Schmidt.
One and only.
Now, it's usual in this chamber that we make party political points, and there will be those, but I think anybody, any citizen of this borough, any irrespective of their party, all of us should recognise the achievement of pulling off such tight finances in such tough circumstances. Because our residents in the London Borough of Hammersmith and Fulham have the third lowest council tax bills in the country. And the rise is less than inflation, pegged at 1.99%. It's one of the most cost-effective council taxes anywhere in the United Kingdom. That's significantly low, by the way, what the government told us they expected us to put council tax up by. Now, we've done this, as you'll see and hear when you walk around the building, by one of our key value systems of ruthless financial efficiency. And that's meant that since we came into office in 2014, we have taken a staggering £111 million real terms cut in wasteful council spending. Now think about that. Until recently, until Harwood Terrace, we didn't have one single protest. And actually, to this date, we've never had one single protest about cuts to services. And there's a very simple reason why. We haven't cut any services. What we've actually done is modernise and invest and provided services on a comprehensive level that makes people jealous around London and across the country. So I congratulate again Max Schmidt and Adam Connell, whose job is to ruthlessly reorganise the council, to fit our brief, as we want to look and feel more like Google and a modern business than an old-fashioned bureaucracy. And Adam, working with Max, supported by Christabel Cooper and others who have joined the team recently, are reshaping the council to look like a modern organisation. And as many of you know, we do not allow lobbyists in to see us, and we do not take hospitality from property developers, and in fact we take a very tough line with property developers. And so I can announce tonight that when we went into the last council election, just over a year ago, boasting that we had won £320 million by taking a kick-ass approach to negotiations with property developers, but now that figure stands at a staggering £685 million. £685 million won for the people of Hammersmith and Fulham by this Labour administration. That is, again, something that every resident, irrespective of party politics, should be proud of, because they certainly will benefit from it. Now, there are real challenges as we move forward throughout the next decade. And those challenges, as they always are philosophical. Because politics, ultimately, is about the view that one party has on the view of society and what the other party might have. And so as I go through this report tonight, I will set out the difference in our philosophy, not just in the ideas we talk about in speeches, but in the hard difference it makes to people's lives across our borough. One key challenge is the current government's approach to what it somewhat ironically calls fur funding. Now, this government has a trick with misusing the English language. When they were going to knock down Charing Cross Hospital, they said they were transforming it. They weren't closing it, despite having bulldozers ready to flatten it. Well, fur funding is far from fur. It is an attack on local government. It is a removal of funding from London, and it's a removal of funding from this borough. All politicians, irrespective of party, should be against fur funding. Not just because it's not fair, because it's particularly bad for all the residents, all of us, represent. And there is other risk. Insufficient economic growth. Now, I have reached a point in my life where I never thought I would reach, where I do not know what the future holds for our country in the relations with the rest of the world. Having crushed us out of the European Union and getting ready to blame them for a trade deal they are too inept to develop, there is uncertainty. And as someone who's run a business for most of my life before I did this, I can tell you something business hates. It's uncertainty. That is a risk to the future of our country and the future of this council's funding. And the government's failure, any government's failure, because it's not as if there's been anyone who's addressed this, to deal with the demographic changes in our society and what that means for elderly people suffering from dementia and other types of illnesses that you get as you move through life, will offer real cost to all of us and offer a challenge that can only be responded to depending on the philosophy of those doing the responding. The Institute of Fiscal Studies state that those authorities that will do worst under the FIR funding formula are currently assessed as having relatively high needs and a low council tax. So you don't need to be Sherlock Holmes to see that we're completely in the frame for that. Walk around our poorest areas and meet people in the greatest deprivation, and that is not just an impetus for us to act, it is also a motive for us to defend. Because that's who they're coming after when they lift the money from Hammersmith and Fulham. Now, there's still a lot of uncertainty around what this fair funding formula will mean. But what we do have is different people's projections. One of the organisations campaigning for this change is the County Councils Network. And that, it's fair enough, if you drive around parts of the UK, you can't help but go into a pothole, and some of those councils are not just underfunded, they're badly run. But their analysis is that the Metropolitan boroughs will get 6.4% increase. But councils will get a 9.2% increase. So you can see why they might support fair funding. Even the non-London unitary boroughs will get a 3.9% increase. Now, I stress this is a projection, and it's a projection by the County Councils Network. But Outer London is going to get a cut of 7.1% on top of austerity and on top of a decade of austerity. Inner London, which we can surely be claimed to be, a staggering 24.9% cut is the projected attack that the Conservative government will make on this council. Now, that's the projected attack. I can see by the shock on some people's faces they haven't been reading the newspapers, but that's the projected cut that this borough will suffer. And it would be relevant for all of us to unite to defend that, because it's detrimental to all our citizens. Now, you could ask, and you could reference, how do you judge a good society? If we're going to talk philosophy, then what is that good society? Now, many people have given different comments. It's about economic growth, maybe, and it's about growth in learning and longevity and all sorts of different measures. But as many people say, one of the ways is to judge the poorest and how that society treats the least defensible. So let's look at the last 10 years, because it does paint a fairly interesting backdrop for what this council has had to deal with. In the last 10 years, in our country, our great country, homelessness rose by 60% between 2011 and 2017. Rose. Rough sleeping, the most dangerous of all types of homelessness, the most desperate people end up on the streets, is up by a staggering 165% in our country from 2010 to 2018. Almost 600 people died homeless in England and Wales in 2017 alone. That's a 24% increase in the previous 5 years. So that's the most vulnerable people. But what else could you look at? Well, let's take the mood, the zeitgeist of our country, our beautiful country that we're all so proud of. Well, in the last 10 years, the police have reported between 2012-13, 42,255 hate crimes. That's crimes normally targeted against the most vulnerable. People of different, people of minority sexualities, people of minority racial heritage, people who are minorities. And they're the people who get picked on by the majorities. And they're the people who feel most under attack. Well, since 2018-2019, the police reported that's gone from 42,255 hate crimes to a staggering 103,379 hate crimes. Now, what was it about our country and our leadership throughout that period that might have empowered people to allow the bile in their tummies to spew out in hate? If we look at the most vulnerable of all, which is children, then over the last 10 years, between 2010 to 2019, there's been a staggering 22% increase in the number of children in poverty. And only yesterday, Sir Michael Marmot talked about how life expectancy, one of the key United Nations ways of examining a society, has flatlined. But guess who has found their life expectancy shrinking? The people who always bear society's ills, women and the poorest women in our society. These are the backdrops that we present this budget. And this is the society that we try to deliver our policies and to bring about the changes. Crime is often a feature of poverty. Anyone who understands it sees that poverty goes up, crime goes up. And so when Tony Blair said tough on the causes of crime, as well as tough on crime, he got it absolutely spot on. But if you're going to cut the fundamental aspects of what makes society work, how can you then remove the law enforcement officers who are going to be cracked down and be tough on the criminals? Well, the Met Police alone, their budget was cut by £1 billion in London last year. Now, there's an interesting article appeared in The Independent, somewhat ironically, on the 1st of April 2010, just a few months after we agreed that 2010 council budget. And it's titled, "Cameron Reveals How He Will Fix Broken Britain." Well, isn't that sickening? What will the historians write? And he, in classic Cameron fashion, he said, "This election will not just be about the economy. Britain's broken society will be on the ballot paper too. People doubt whether change can really happen. They see drug and alcohol abuse, but feel there's not much more we can do about it. They see the deep poverty in some communities, but they feel it's there to stay. They experience the crime, the abuse, the insensitivity on our streets, but they feel it's just the way we are going. They see families falling apart, but expect it's irreversible." He said his goal was to build a richer, fairer, safer Britain, where opportunity is more equal, and get this, poverty is abolished. That is a disgrace, and I hope he reflects on that every night before he goes to sleep. Now, we are going to be tough on crime in this budget. We're going to be very tough on crime. We've had 3 children killed in our borough, murdered, not just murdered because they fell out with each other, because drug kingpins instructed it to happen, after years of brutal abuse. Children who at one time would have been cajoled into getting involved in crime with offers of material goods like trainers and other benefits are now told that if they don't do as they're told, they and their families will be hurt. There is a change in the way crime happens, and it requires us to stand up to crime. So next week, we will bring forward a comprehensive paper that details how that will look. We will put the greatest number of law enforcement officers onto the streets of Hammersmith and Fulham ever. We will set up a new gangs unit that will not just go after the gangs, it will go after the people who profit from the gangs, and we will get them, we will lock them up, and we will keep them there. And it will be there to do one fundamental thing, to protect the kids It will work with the schools. It will work with the youth clubs. It will work with everybody in society, because if there's a mission of this administration, it's to protect those children at risk of being in gang crime, and that's why we will spend £4.5 million, a British record for the size of a borough in Hammersmith and Fulham, and we will agree that next week. Strengthening society is a way to be tough on the causes of crime, and there are a myriad of ways of doing it. Those of us who were in opposition will remember by the 2010 budget, youth clubs had been sold off, community centres had been sold off, and youth club services had been cut. So I am proud of both Sue McMillan and Larry Culhane for the work they have done on tackling that problem in the period that we've been in office. So this year, work will carry on with two brand new youth clubs, one in White City, one in Sands End. We will spend an extra £5.5 million this year, a year of more cuts. We have found more money for more children, £5.5 million extra in children's services in Hammersmith and Fulham this year. Now, Sally Brooks, many of you will know her and meet her as the inspirational head teacher and chief principal at Fulham Cross Academy. And I was talking to her about the challenges she faces in raising the educational attainment of her children. And she told me that too many children in Hammersmith and Fulham are coming to school with aching bellies. Aching bellies. Aching bellies through hunger. And their parents were unable to feed them. And sometimes they would say to the child, "Would you like some food?" And they say, "No, thank you. I have it sorted." Because they were ashamed. Now, if you talk to Charlie Rigby, who's one of the excellent people we work with on our gangs unit, he thinks shame is one of the reasons why people fall out of society, particularly kill children. All of us remember those difficult adolescent years when you're trying to discover who you are. And shame is something that no child should suffer alone. So this year, we became the first council in Britain to offer free breakfast for all our primary school children and free lunches in our most deprived schools, including the school that Sally Brooks is the principal of. Standing up to food poverty in a way that goes to its heart and making sure we send a message to the children that when Labour is in power in Hammersmith and Fulham, we tell them we're on your side. That's the message we say when we say no food poverty in Hammersmith and Fulham. Adult social services. I have some personal experience of this. At the end of your life, people's life health, mental and physical health can change. And too many people, when we came into office, were choosing not to have vital home care services. They sat alone. Maybe they had the money in their property, but they didn't want to pay it, and they were at risk because people wanted to do things with the money they'd paid into the system. And we looked at the numbers and worked out how to get rid of adult social care charges. And we're the only council in Britain to have abolished adult social care charges, and one of only two places in England to actually not have them. And it's easy to talk about the numbers, isn't it? But every time I meet somebody, when you knock on a door, and they tell you, "My wife has Alzheimer's," or "My husband's suffering from vascular dementia," or "I have a long-term health needs with a child," and we know we are taking that worry of money away from them, that philosophy is turned into action, and it's compassion at the very heart of it. So I'm very pleased that with our adult social services this year, on top of the 1.2 million we're putting in from the precept, we are putting in an extra 767,000 for adult social care, bringing our total to 14.5 million extra. 14.5 million extra for adult social care in the 6 years we've been in office. And if you look at that, it's an astonishing investment. Now, Wesley Harcourt's leading on our climate change initiative and working very closely with the residents group that we've set up to tackle the climate emergency. But I am particularly grateful to Wesley Harcourt for one solid reason. Back in 2014, he came into my office and said he thought we needed to do a comprehensive structural integrity review of Hammersmith Bridge. And we met with the officers. We asked, how often have these things happened? Never came back the answer. Is the structural integrity of our suspension bridge solid? We won't find out until we do such a review, came back the answer. And we instructed officers to do that review. If it wasn't for Wesley asking for a structural integrity review of our 133-year-old suspension bridge, I have every confidence that there would have been a disaster. Say, Wesley, thank you very much for averting a potential disaster. Now, we're not there yet on Hammersmith Bridge. We're just not there yet. There's lots of money to be paid. It could cost at least £120 million. I know more about bridges than I ever thought I wanted to know. I even find myself watching TV programmes now sometimes on structural engineering projects from around the world and thinking, I must make a note of that and ask our team next time I see them. But keeping people safe and not taking risk is what we're about. And we, all of us, need to come together to make sure this bridge is fixed. And we really do need to work to make sure we get the financing right. And I am grateful for the attitude taken by Richmond Council and indeed the MP in Richmond, Sarah Olney, as well as our own MP, Andy Slaughter, for the constructive way they're working with us on that particular problem. If we move on to look at some of the key issues, then one of the best things I saw last week was a newspaper article praising Sue Fenimore. Now, I always have a view there should be more newspaper articles praising Sue Fenimore, but this particular one was praising for a fact that when you look at the national rough sleeping figures and you look at the challenge of rough sleeping and the most disenfranchised people around, what our Sue Fenimore did here is a 30% reduction in rough sleepers over the last 2 years. That's a staggering figure, and she's done it by the most compassionate services, reaching out and getting those people and bringing them back into mainstream life. So thank you, Sue Fenimore. So we can stop bad things happen, and there's many of those, saving Sullivan, the first thing we did when we came into office. But it's also a case of building for the future. And back in 2013, when Andrew Jones and I used to talk about what we might do if everyone controlled the council, we agreed we should only be in office if we wanted to do big things. And Andrew, who, as you know, is a professor of economics, said that his main contention was Britain should have had an industrial strategy a long time ago. And he detailed over several beers how many other countries have an industrial strategy, but Britain doesn't. I am pleased, therefore, that we have the first modern industrial strategy in Britain, the first of its kind that's in alliance with an academic institution in Imperial College London. I was particularly pleased when Manoj Badil, the co-founder of Blenheim Chalcott, took me aside when we were at Novartis' offices last week and gave me a quote which went, I've worked with many councils over the last 20 years, but HS industrial strategy is the most coherent I've come across. I was equally pleased when Helen Rowbottom, Andrew Jones and I met the president of the UK Novartis, who told us that one of the things that attracted them to move their operation to Hammersmith and Fulham was our industrial strategy. And I'm particularly pleased that not just have Novartis moved in, a leading firm in pharmaceuticals, but so have OpenCell, so have ITV, so have many other companies, even IKEA, which fits with our brief to be the global hotspot in economic growth in digital, tech, STEM industries and media for the whole of the United Kingdom and reaching out to the rest of the world. Andrew Jones has many good ideas. A comedy festival is now in our third years. We want to make the northern part of our borough rival the Edinburgh Festival. And that's what it will do now as we move forward. The Civic Campus, which we've worked on, is an astonishing testament to the cleverness of Joe Rowlands, Andrew Jones, and the team behind that. It's it's a different type of town hall. We think as people get sick of local government and possibly question democracy, revitalising it not just in the way we behave, but in the bricks and mortar of our building where we work is fundamentally important. So this will not be a building where officers and councillors sit and work alone. This will be a building where children come in to use their homework space, where entrepreneurs come in to use the special entrepreneur space, where at weekends, because we have decked out the assembly hall to carry acoustically be able to cope with an orchestra, there will be performances, people flooding in to hear the finest music of all types. There will be an art gallery in what used to be a grubby central car park. There will be a four-screen cinema. There will be a sky bar where residents, for the public, where residents will sit on the roof and watch the sun settle over our beautiful borough. And all of that done in a way that makes a profit of £28 million in build cost compared to the scheme we inherited from our predecessors that would have cost us £68 million and been full of empty flats for overseas investors looking at the crash for years to come. Larry Kilcaine gets in many different places, and one of them is our economic strategy. That's a minute. Larry is charged with aligning not just the jobs and opportunities we're bringing to Hammersmith and Fulham, but aligning the curriculums of all our schools so they fit with the opportunities. So we're talking to all the heads about how our schools become part of our industrial strategy. How do they learn the latest tech, biotech, STEM industry initiatives? How do they learn the latest performance skills to be able to get involved in digital media in order to have the best possible lives anywhere? Our head teachers are excited about that. They're joining that. And I have to pay tribute to Larry for working on that. But I gave Larry that job. So in a degree, that was a bit of my idea, to tell you the truth. So I don't mind giving him all the praise. But, but I'll tell you where he does deserve praise. He came into my office 9 months ago to say that we'd been approached by a social entrepreneur who was working with the United Nations on a climate change qualification. Now, climate change is the biggest issue facing our country and indeed our planet. And the best way to fix it is to change our lifestyles, but also to develop the science to tackle some of the damage that's already been done and is being done. And as much as I'm sorry to say it, we need the next generation to carry on the fight, and maybe we can start it. What Larry did in arranging for every single child in every single school, private, public, or free, to begin to get a United Nations qualification will not just deliver thousands of Greta Thunbergs to go out and campaign in the future, but it will deliver the scientists and the entrepreneurs of the future who will lead some of the change that will tackle the emergency that is affecting our climate. So thank you, Larry. That was a brilliant piece of work you did, and all our children will benefit for decades to come. The West Kensington Gibbs Green Estate, I thought we should have been an easy cross-party understanding, because it was, I think, not just the worst deal done by any local authority in history. And I was quite interested that we now have that knowledge. You know, we've spoken to plenty of other developers. This was a deal that was done by the former Conservative administration. They did not index link. They took responsibility for CPOing, for compulsory purchasing all the freehold and leasehold properties. And they locked it in at the 2012 price they did the deal, without index linking it to inflation. And what that meant is we would have gone bankrupt if we'd put that deal forward. Now, I thought that's a no-brainer for anyone to understand. And what we saw with the West Kensington Gibbs Green Estate is really the difference between the types of people you should work with. Because there are two types of people in property world. There are developers and there are speculators. And the people who had the West Kensington Gibbs Green Estate were the latter. They were speculators. They bought the land, they got planning permission, they got themselves the bonuses, they whipped up the land value to the time of 12.05 billion. And when it collapsed, because their scheme was undeliverable, as they told us in 2014, when we came into office, their only solution was to say to us, would you give us planning permission for 50% greater planning permission, 50% more, 78-storey buildings. They wanted to build dozens of them. Now, they didn't really want to build them. They wanted to tell the marketplace they were going to build them as they sold off a plot of land, just like any other commodities dealer. That's the worst type of speculation. And it's bad enough. But at the heart of that was the homes of 760 residents on the West Kensington Gibbs Green Estates. Now, I'm glad we've got it back. I was therefore surprised to read in Conservative Home the perpetrators of that dreadful deal, the worst in British history, as the history books will write up, justifying that scheme and also demonstrating they did not know what they're talking about. What they should have been doing was apologising for not just nearly wrecking the finances of this council, but also for having the sword of Damocles hang over the residents of those two estates for over 12 years. That's what should have happened. But within that, and within the failed civic campus scheme, their town hall scheme they have, what you see in the Conservatives is a value system that, when put into place, fails because they don't put the effort in to properly understand the nature of the market economy. So we understand business, we work hard with business, and that's why we deal hard with property developers and we kick property speculators out of our borough. Who would have thought, when David Cameron was writing that article on the 1st of April 2010, that we would crash out the European Union? I was, you know, in one of my favourite bars in New York in August, and the conversation struck with everyone sitting around the bar on which country was in the worst state. And New York's a democratic city. Was it New York with Trump and all the awful things that administration was doing? Or was it Britain with the chaotic 10 years of government and our flawed plan to crash out the European Union? And I obviously thought it was Britain, but to my surprise, so did everybody else. And there's not a progressive American you meet who isn't desperately sad about Trump, but people are laughing at us around the world. I met someone from Greece only last week, and she was in tears that we had left. You meet residents up and down this borough who are European citizens, who are desperately sad, often married British people and become British themselves, thinking this was the place for them. So I am genuinely proud that we have hung those banners, paid for by government funding to award people the chance to fill in the right qualifications so they can have a right to stay. But the number of warming emails that I've had thanking me for putting those banners up, saying it does take away some, just a little bit, of the sting. That's the problem with the Conservatives, is their approach is often not just short-term, but brutally damaging, based on speculation and the market economy at its worst. So as we go forward, we will strengthen our civic life, and Sue McMillan's working on that with award action groups, which are looking to devolve power down to local levels. We will become a dementia-friendly council, as Ben Coleman is working to do. We're working closely with Imperial College London Healthcare Trust to strengthen Charing Cross Hospital, even offering to give them some of our Section 106 money that we've negotiated. And we're bringing some of the changes. But I just want all of us to reflect, as we've turned this decade, on the changes that we've brought so far. Because people too often say voting doesn't make any difference. So I think, when you reflect, that you, this team, this administration, have helped deliver the saving of Charing Cross Hospital in the most ruthlessly effective campaign working with our residents that anybody has seen to stop the biggest hospital closure programme in London's history. But Max Schmidt and his team decided that rather than sending bailiffs into desperate people who couldn't pay the council tax, we would work with them to have an ethical debt policy, which to change the way people deal with their finances. We're building the largest amount of genuinely affordable homes in 10 years. The civic campus alone is 52% affordable housing, most of which is at 25% of market rate. We're taking new measures on things we never thought we'd have to do. Period poverty. Girls who don't have sanitary towels and tampons. They don't have them. And they're in poverty. and we're taking measures to fix that, as well as food poverty, working with the food banks. Got new support for the food banks, with two new food banks, one in White City and another one to open in Sands End. We've got new measures to tackle air quality, a myriad of them, ranging from the most electric car charging bays in Britain to new ways of generating heat for our civic campus. We saved the Lyric Theatre when we came into office, who were months of going bankrupt with a £5 million loan, which we then wrote off because we didn't believe they'd ever be able to pay us back. And we funded the Bush Theatre, which is now famously one of the best artistic hubs anywhere in the world. We saved the Law Centre, the Hammersmith and Fulham Law Centre, not just with £1 million over 10 years, but with new offices in our library. Lady Hale opened the offices, and in her speech said more councils need to do what the Hammersmith and Fulham Labour Administration is doing, because the poorest people, up against the most difficult situations, need legal advice, not just the richest. That's what we did with the Law Centre. We're the only council in the country to send social workers into camps to rescue child refugees. I was touched when I got a call from a parliamentary advisor who'd been out in Calais and said she had met some of the NGOs working with children, and to send a message that Hammersmith and Full Labour are legends, was what the text message said, in Calais. So whilst I was touched, it's deeply sad that we live in a world where our country turns the back on children, currently clambering onto boats in the most desperate situations, with the one hope that there will be refuge and a rule of law and compassion that takes them out of the misery and torture that the smugglers and traffickers have delivered them for years. So as we step back and as we present this budget, let us just recognise that the UK is an amazing country. And it is deeply disappointing that the National Labour Party has not been able to muster the ability to win the hearts and minds of our fellow countrymen and women as we have here in Hammersmith and Fulham. And I hope that will change soon, because it needs to be changed. Because 1/5 of our population, 14 million people, live in poverty. And 1.5 of them have experienced destitution, 1.5 million of them experienced destitution in the year 2017. So the last 10 years have been really tough for too many Britons. But I think here, what we do in Hammersmith and Fulham isn't about what we want to be or where our careers might go. It's about the changes we want to bring and the society we want to change. So I want to send a message that we will always kick in the door on poverty and crime and do everything possible to stand up for all our residents in Hammersmith and Fulham. And in doing so, we will send a message of hope, I think, that things can change, things can be better, things will get better when we're and our fellow people of our value system are in charge. Because in not just building the good society, what we're trying to do is to give every one of our citizens, no matter what their circumstances, the best possible life chances anywhere. And that's our mission in Hammersmith and Fulham. And that's why I commend this budget.
Thank you. I call on the Leader of the Opposition, Councillor Andrew Brown, to speak. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. And can I first give my sincere apologies for my lateness? I've had terrible transport issues today. I've only just managed to get here at all. I must confess that this speech I'm giving this evening is not the one that I had drafted over the last few weeks. As you can imagine, using the normal Hammersmith and Fulham modus operandi, it was full of invective and unrelenting criticism of the administration over their failures, such as Hammersmith Bridge, Harwood Terrace, not to mention the budget overrun and increase the council tax by the maximum percentage without triggering a referendum. However, where would another slanging match in this chamber get us? Last night showed, especially its contrast with most full council meetings, that if we endeavour to empathise with the other group's position, respecting that each side only wishes the best for our borough, and respectfully and constructively discussing how our different perspectives, as well as local knowledge, can help the borough's residents a lot more than the overly adversarial style and ad hominem attacks that we have previously seen, we could have better meetings for the benefit of our residents. Whether you are attacking the former Conservative administration or we are attacking your record or particular incidents that have occurred in our borough, neither side believes the other nor respects their line of argument. It changes not a single mind nor advances the issues that most concern our residents. We would much rather, and I strongly believe, that the model of full council should see a root and branch reform in order to achieve this, that we should always strive to look forwards, work collaboratively and constructively where the issue is not partisan, and respectfully discuss, but also listen when we are in disagreement. We should recognise that following the dramatic general election result in December, that although Corbyn's Labour vision has been widely rejected by the country, the Conservatives did not have as good a night in London as in most other regions, and needs to reconnect with many areas of our city. With a large Conservative majority in Westminster and a general election at least 4 years away, we hope we can use our influence with government and its ministers to encourage them to make important decisions for our borough, as we undoubtedly did with Charing Cross Hospital, and to a lesser extent with HS2 being a national rather than a local issue. At the end of the day, we want to see what is best for our residents, and we will work with you and with government and other Conservative boroughs in order to achieve that. To that end, moving to the substantive issue of the budget, we do not support the increase in council tax proposed. Our record demonstrated our philosophy that council tax can be cut at the same time as cutting debt and investing in services, with many improving during our administration. I do, however, recognise the challenges facing all local authorities from both a government funding perspective, although we hope that the more positive recent trend of improving funding, albeit after many years of reductions, continues. In addition, the demographic challenges and additional statutory responsibilities placed on councils, such as in children's services, the increase in children with special educational needs, has placed a very significant burden on virtually all councils. Speaking with Conservative leaders in control, the vast majority are making a similar decision on council tax as you are. We therefore don't agree with them either, although without being in the position to set the budget ourselves, sadly due to the decisions of the electorate in recent years, we are not the ones making the tough decisions that you and other council administrations across the country are doing. Our record in administration, at a time when virtually no other council was cutting council tax, suggests that we could at the very least keep council tax levels flat. But it is not us working with officers in the finance team and across council departments to set this budget, nor trying to meet last year's. I would like to, at this point, pay tribute to our finance director, Hitesh Jolpara, who has so ably managed the finances of our borough, like his predecessor before him, Jane West, and without whom our borough and its council would be much poorer as a result, both literally and metaphorically. Hitesh, I've always found you a pleasure to work with. Your integrity is without doubt, and you always deal with our group with the utmost charm, candour and good humour in what I know is a very difficult role. We wish you the very best with your future endeavours and are apprehensive that whoever it is that replaces you will have very big shoes to fill. There's a particular section of your report, Hitesh, which I think is particularly crucial and highlights some of your thoughts over the budget. In section 10.14, you say that the Strategic Director of Finance and Governance considers that current reserves are adequate to deal with anticipated risks and liabilities. Reserves can only be spent once, and the forecast of 2023 identifies a tightening in the council's finances that will need careful management and review. Continued focus will be required on keeping spend within budget, avoiding the use of reserves to balance future budgets, and on rebuilding reserves to support future investment and priorities. Whilst the administration has allocated £7.1 million to increase the reserves in the 2020-2021 financial year, it seems to us very difficult to see how this will be achieved, considering the current significant budget overspend of £12.1 million, even if that is reduced to the projected £9.5 million. That is a significant gap to fill. There are also significant risks hanging over the council. Whilst we too had a scheme to redevelop the town hall and replace the horrendous extension, your scheme is of course your own. And with any civic project of this type, there are always risks associated to overrunning the length of time that project takes, with the significant increased costs, as you state in this report, overspends on the work itself, or a failure to achieve some of the commercial aims of the redevelopment, in partnership with your development partner. If you achieve the aims of the redevelopment, then it will be a great improvement to King Street and the whole of West Hammersmith, but I am sure you appreciate the risks associated. Whilst Hammersmith Bridge is clearly one of the issues of greatest concern to a very significant part of our borough and beyond, there is very little in this budget related to it, primarily only section 24 on page 143, which only refers to the £25 million funding by TfL of the first stage of the report of the repair. Although the council leader has spoken on it this evening, there seems to be no certainty on how, by what means, funded by whom, or how soon the bridge will be fully repaired and open again to all vehicles, as previously was and to which you have publicly committed. We are happy to fight the bridges and the borough's corner with government, but as was raised by my colleagues last night over the Harwood Terrace issue, we insist on a greater degree of transparency with regards to the engineering reports relating to this crucial issue. I would also have liked to see much more ambitious changes in this budget related to the Council's commitment to fighting the climate emergency. There is a lot that can be done and should be done now, and whilst we have no issue with the Residents' Commission looking into this, we believe that time is of the essence and should not be wasted. The recent serious weather conditions in our country and across the globe is a wake-up call that we should not be blasé about climate change, and that only by small incremental improvements in every level of human life across the developed and developing world can we defeat climate change and the truly dire consequences that face us if we don't. It cannot be left to governments and intergovernmental organisations to affect this, to change this problem. We as councils have a role to play, as do we as individuals. Moving on to some of the specific cost savings identified, it is always difficult to identify savings and often controversial, as you frequently point out with our administration's record. But there are some that I have concern with. In particular, item 60 on page 87, relating to sexual health services. Whilst I can completely understand the rationale of not recontracting with CLCH for this particular service, it seems at a time of significantly increasing rates of STIs in our city, especially certain drug-resistant strains of STIs, it is, in my view, a misstep not to reinvest that saving in a more effective sexual health service. In conclusion, I have noted some change to the tone of the administration both last night and tonight, and I hope that our tone has been noted also. Where you do things well, we will recognise and support you. When we believe you get things wrong, as you recognised last night over Highwood Terrace, we will draw it to your attention. It is our responsibility to hold the administration to account, but to do so in a responsible way, but also to champion our borough with our Conservative government. This we will continue to do. Thank you, Madam Mayor.
Thank you. I call on councillors Christabel Cooper, Andrew Jones and Mike Schmidt to speak for the administration. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. So I'd like to, for a moment, to move the debate on from the local to the national level, firstly because I think it's relevant to what we're talking about here, and secondly because, quite frankly, pointing out the failures of Tory chancellors versus Labour chancellors happens to be one of my favourite pastimes. So if we go back to 2010, George Osborne says he aims to eliminate the day-to-day budget deficit by 2015. In 2011, the forecasts moved that back to 2016-17. In 2013, the date was moved even further to 2017-18. In 2016, Osborne says he will achieve an overall budget surplus by 2020. By 2018, that had been moved back to 22-23. Do we see a pattern here? This morning, the Institute for Fiscal Studies issued a report warning Chancellor Dominic Cummings, Rishi Sunak, that the manifesto commitment of a surplus by 2022-2023 cannot be met by current policy either. George Osborne famously promised to fix the roof while the sun was shining. Well, guys, I'm afraid it's still letting the rain in. And this is despite a decade of austerity, a decade of cuts, which particularly hurt the poorest and the youngest groups, specially targeted because they're the least likely to vote Tory. The Marmot report, as the leader recently mentioned yesterday, concluded that austerity is literally prematurely shortening the lives of women living in the most deprived areas. So why has all this austerity failed to deliver a balanced budget? The answer lies in the fact that with an ageing and increasingly unhealthy population, the costs of health, social care and pensions just keep growing. And here's the thing, if your costs keep growing and you don't want to borrow money, and the cuts you're making are now leading to literally people's lives being shortened, then you have very little choice but to raise taxes, as the IFS pointed out to central government this morning. And of course, that's equally true at a local level, and it's why 97% of councils are planning to raise council tax this year. Given the relatively limited capacity of local authorities to borrow, given that we've already made tens of millions of pounds worth of efficiency savings in this council, unless we are going to start making the poorest suffer, then, which this Labour administration, which of course would never do, the only sensible course is to put up council tax by the small amount we are proposing. Just a quick reminder, we have the third lowest council tax for abandoned property in England. We could increase council tax by £450 a year and still be within the bottom 25% of councils. And things are only going to get worse for local authorities. The Leader's already mentioned the fair funding review. But the new immigration policy announced by Home Secretary Dominic Cummings, Priti Patel, which assumes that anyone earning under £25,000 a year isn't doing anything useful, will have a huge impact on the social care sector. We're likely to see staff shortages and unaffordable cost rises. So therefore, I welcome the Leader of the Opposition's new spirit of collaboration, because I would urge you to join us in lobbying the government to provide an exemption to their immigration policy for social care, just as they have for agricultural workers. And if we secure that, maybe we can get an exemption for people working in catering, in food processing, in hospitality, which equally rely on migrant workers. In fact, let's get so many exemptions that the policy looks very much like EU freedom of movement does now. except that the Britons don't have the right to live and work in the EU in return. But never mind, take back control, that's what I say. Anyway, back to local government. A recent LGIU survey on local government finances showed that 74% of councils are not confident in the sustainability of local government finance. One in 10 say they are in danger of being unable to fulfil their statutory duties. This year, one in 7 anticipate a judicial challenge to the levels of service that they provide. And amongst this number will be many Tory-run councils as well. And I don't believe that any of us go to the trouble to stand and serve as councillors on any party if we don't ultimately all want to help people. So I would urge you again, don't have a go at this administration. Don't waste your time doing that. Go and talk to your friends in central government. They won't listen to Labour because they think we just want to spend money anyway. But they might listen to Tory councillors telling them that the assault on the finances of local authorities is morally wrong and is now destroying people. Please don't waste your time and energy attacking this administration for taking the only sane and responsible route by raising council tax this year. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Jones? Sorry, stop. Councillor Jones, please.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Well, I unfortunately wasn't able to be here last night, but I welcome the spirit of the new tone that the Leader of the Opposition has just described. And as the Leader said, I too have been doing this for some time, and obviously as the years pass, I think to reflect on earlier budget speeches that I have given. And this afternoon I thought, well, let me have a look. Not to 2010, for I was not a councillor at that point. I was re-elected in that election, but to 2011. And this nine-year anniversary gave me pause to stand back and reflect what had changed since then and how different this budget in 2020 is under this Labour administration. And I want to inflect, in the spirit of making the political points, towards the Leader of the Opposition's comments. Because what I said in 2011, I think, has resonance with many of the claims that I want to unpick a little bit. If you look back to 2011... the world was rather different. We've heard that George Osborne was Chancellor, not Dominic Cummings, and he was zealously arguing he was going to fix everything with austerity, fix the UK's economic woes. I said in my speech at the time that was economically illiterate, and so it was. The UK's economic performance since then confirms that. Here in Hammersmith and Fulham, the opposition in power were busy, as the Leader of the Opposition said, cutting council tax, although not by very much. And how they were doing that, as I've said many times, is why what did incense one leader of the council at the time, a huge fire sale of very high-value assets, which, us being in West London, we own lots of very valuable things. Fulham Town Hall, Sands End Community Centre, which has now got some six-bedroom multi-million pound houses on it. Many, many assets. Lots of street properties. Hundreds of them worth several million pounds that were, at that time, council houses, but which were used to reduce the council's debt. What I also said at that speech in 2011 was that the council's debt was very cheap indeed, because, of course, interest rates were low after the financial crisis, so this wasn't really good economics. In the budget, then, the speeches at the time said the Conservative administration was cutting council tax and were cutting taxes. But, of course, we know that wasn't true, because what I was talking about was, and for those of you who've been in this a while, the long pages of different council charges. And I ran through a long list of many, many charges, which we labelled stealth charges, because they were going up by 70, 80, 90%. And I'm not just talking about small things. Whatever you use the council for under the Conservative administration, if they wanted to collect your fridge, one minute it cost £5, the next minute it was £30. So they were making a good deal of income from that. The council tax cut was actually funded by increases in other forms of taxes. So it led me to a conclusion in that budget speech that locally the Conservatives weren't really very good with money. How the world has changed now, and the leader has, I don't have 40 or so minutes, but I would absolutely commend this budget to you. And I'll do it very simply in the way we talk in the when we're visiting the Innovation Centre at Imperial with the startups. This budget is astounding. I want everybody in that room to think about this. This budget is astounding. Right? There is no local authority in this country that is doing what the leader described. We've just put council tax up by just below CPI. It's the third lowest in the country. I should have said, of course, I have spent 9 years being heckled endlessly by the opposition benches. I feel missing it, but now I feel in my comfort zone. So this budget is astounding.
Excuse me.
Below inflation, below inflation increase, we have investment of all the things that were described, and we have the third lowest bandy council tax in the country. A resident I was talking to recently, back in the real world outside to prick the bubble of unreality that was described by the leader of the opposition, a resident to me said, "How do you do that? I'm just grateful that you're not closing all the libraries," which is what other Conservative councils are having to do around the country, or reducing services, or charging for home care. We have also kept all our services alive. We've invested in them. We've increased them. So in the context outside of Hammersmith and Fulham, I would commend this budget to you. I would commend the finance team for putting together such excellent work over many years. There is no local authority delivering that level of council tax with this level of investment. We stand out nationally. We stand out as an example. We stand out with our industrial strategy in talking about opportunity for all in this borough in a way that the last Conservative administration could not deliver. And this budget is something I'm tremendously proud of. I'm proud of the leader, of Council Schmidt, and of all of those who've been involved in putting it together. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Councillor Schmidt.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. This is the sixth budget that I've worked on with Hitesh and the administration. Unfortunately, during that time, at the national level, we haven't had that same level of stability. When we started our administration, George Osborne was Chancellor, preaching austerity. Then Philip Hammond took over for a few years before being kicked out of the Conservative Party. Then Shabbi Javid took over for a few months until he said that no self-respecting minister could serve under Boris Johnson. And now, as has been mentioned a few times, we have Dominic Cummings and his crack team of super forecasters running the Treasury. Although for forecasters, they seem to look a lot more backward than forward for inspiration. We have seen the same level of turnover among the Conservative leadership here in Hammersmith and Fulham. Councillor Smith had several budget responses that we were treated to. Highlights included confusing one-off money secured from developers with the overall ongoing budget gap. He also suggested that we replace our Meals on Wheels service with Tesco Value frozen meals. Boris Johnson's Conservative Party saw a talent in that, and they've now put him promptly into Parliament. Councillor Carlebach used his one budget speech to trail a series of exciting policies that he said would be in the Conservative manifesto for the 2018 council elections. We still await every day the publication of that manifesto. It must have got lost in the mail. But we now have a new leader in Councillor Brown, and we do welcome the new tone and the lack of heckling, having had an email from the mayor asking them not to misbehave. They've taken that seriously, and we should congratulate them for that. But that is no excuse for not taking the job of opposition seriously. And that is, frankly, a very disappointing analysis of the budget. Saying that they would not cut council tax, but then mentioning that everyone else is doing it, is ridiculous, and not putting forward one saving that they would make to not cut council tax. When they were in administration, there was a council tax freeze grant from Eric Pickles. They were bribed to cut council tax. The government now models our funding on the basis that we put up council tax at the maximum level. That's how they model the amount of money they give to us. Councils are now virtually instructed by the Treasury to put up council tax. You cannot compare it to a time when the government was telling councils to cut it. No ideas were put forward in any of the six packs from Conservative councillors on savings that we can make. So it is ridiculous to say that you are not in favour of a council tax cut and then to put forward zero ideas for what could be done instead. You mention Hitesh's advice on the reserves, but completely ignore that Appendix J, there is a 10-page reserve strategy showing exactly why we have confidence that reserves are at the right level. You might have seen that if you had sent anyone from the Conservative group to the finance pack where it was discussed. We went through the reserve strategy in detail. No one was there. Now, I understand sometimes councillors can't make it, but you could have sent someone else to engage in the reserve strategy. Instead, no one came to scrutinize the finance pack when it looked at the entire budget and when it looked at the reserve strategy. It's just not good enough. We can be friendly, but we should still take our job seriously. We're all getting paid as councillors, and it's just not good enough not to show up. Or when you do show up, to show up very late. Hammersmith Bridge. We have people coming from across the borough here. Everyone seemed to get here on time. Hammersmith Bridge. You say that there's nothing in this budget about funding Hammersmith Bridge, nor should there be. It's a piece of national infrastructure. We have looked after it. Councillor Harcourt made sure it was properly studied, and we found a problem, and now the government must assist with fixing it. And I saw that the MP for Chelsea and Fulham said irresponsibly that we should be using parking fine revenue to pay for the fixing of the bridge, ignoring completely, as he often does, the detail. The detail is parking revenue money all goes to pay for transport infrastructure in this borough, maintaining our streets and paying for freedom passes for the elderly. Which of those would you like to cut to instead spend on Hammersmith Bridge? Again, I doubt you've given that any thought because you guys just don't look at the detail. And the final tribute to you not looking at the detail, the only saving that the entire opposition has now commented on was the sexual health commissioning efficiency. And the leader of the opposition said, and I quote, that should be spent on public health, ignoring at the top of the public health saving items of the budget, public health savings, and I quote, to be reinvested in public health outcomes. If you bothered to read the detail, you would know this is the best budget and that this is one of six consecutive budgets that don't cut a single service, but instead put our residents first. And it's a real shame on you that you haven't taken your job as opposition seriously. If you do want to engage maturely in this, at least read your papers, at least take the budget seriously. This is a good budget, and you should vote for it, because you haven't put forward a single reason in detail why you shouldn't.
Three speakers, and I haven't got the list. No speakers? Thank you. So I call on Councillor Stephen Cowan to sum up. Thank you.
Look, I'm a little surprised that there's just one speaker from the opposition. I don't remember any point in the 8 years I was proud to lead the opposition that we had people queuing up to give speeches. And to lay examples of what was wrong. One of the people heckling, we used to know, one of the people on the back benches, the very back benches over there, heckling, we used to call him the cabinet member for the French Riviera. Because, not just because he spent £12,000 flying there at public expense, but because he travelled around offering all our council estates, all our community centres, for sale. If you're going to say you don't support the budget and you miss the first 15 minutes, I can only assume you've done a proper analysis via the PACs. So have you been to any PACs would be the question most residents want to ask. I don't know the answer to that. I'm assuming no. Okay, no. Well, if you had been and you hadn't missed the first 15 minutes, you'd have seen that there are some very tight issues approaching local government finance. And at least one of your team, and you've got a few of them, could have been able to stand up, having heard the first 15 minutes of my speech, which set out the numbers, and critique them, offer some type of critique. But it is ridiculous. There is, to put it simple, to stew it down to one single thing, I'll quote someone I don't have a lot of time for. And she said, there's no such thing as a magic money tree. I think you know who I'm talking about. Okay, I'll tell you, it's Theresa May. That's just the long and short of it. You can't do two things. You're caught in a quandary in the opposition. You cannot say, yeah, we don't like all the bad stuff the former Conservative administration do. Yeah. We like all the good stuff you're doing. But we think you should cut council tax even more. Despite the finances being set out in detail and what the quandary is with those finances. Not finances of our making, finances of Boris Johnson's, Theresa May's and David Cameron's making. That's what we're responding to. And on Hammersmith Bridge, it just simply isn't good enough to say, well, where's the money for being spent? I don't believe the residents of this borough should spend a penny on Hammersmith Bridge. We inherited a mess. You know, the officers told me in the year before we came into office, there was a plan to spend some money doing up a wooden decking on Hammersmith Bridge, and they took it to your deputy leader, and she cut it to £250,000 from £1 million, because she thought £1 million sounded like a lot of money. Now, when I put this to her, and she did turn up to the pack where we put it, she just said there wasn't the need to spend it. There was no need to spend it, and that's why you could cut it to £250,000. Well, guess what? When Wesley said, let's do the comprehensive structural integrity review, and we brought in engineers from the Golden Gate Bridge and metal engineers from the North Sea on oil rigs to tell us what's going on with our bridge, they came back and said it is riddled with corrosion. And guess what? It's a suspension bridge. So if you have corrosion riddled through a suspension bridge, then it is a danger to public health. But particularly what we found when we used the latest groundbreaking technology to examine the pedestals, the cast iron pedestals, what we found was microfractures, which meant the bridge could have automatically collapsed. And imagine that on the news, Hammersmith Bridge collapsing, buses on the people in the River Thames. So I'm not joking when I say congratulations to Wesley Harcourt, because he saved, I think, a lot of people from a calamity. But the Conservative response has simply not been good enough. Standing on Hammersmith Bridge saying, opening it, having Greg Hands have a public meeting without knowing how much it was going to cost, we were scoping the cost, and saying you should take all the parking money, it wasn't just bad for the reasons Max said, it was bad because at the time he didn't know what the total cost was. So if we had got the £25 million of parking money, it still wouldn't have been enough. There is a real issue with his national asset, and what we need is the government to help pay for it. Instead, we had government ministers standing on the bridge saying they could put a temporary motor bridge for £5 million. It costs more than that in legal fees by the time you CPO'd and dealt with the legal actions. And if you could get through fish breeding season to build it when they said they could build it, then it would still cost around the same price of building the main, fixing the main bridge. We just need more from this opposition, because there are real challenges facing the people of our borough. We've been sent here on a humbling experience to represent other people and do the best by their lives. But that does mean your side taking part. And at the moment, that is sadly lacking. Thank you.
Thank you. I now move to the vote. As this is a vote on the budget, is it required that a roll call vote be taken?
Will councillors please indicate how they wish to vote on the recommendation? Councillor Ahern.
For.
Councillor Brown. Councillor Caleb-Landy.
For.
Councillor Cassidy.
For.
Councillor Coleman.
For.
Councillor Connell.
For.
Councillor Cooper.
For.
Councillor Cowan.
For.
Councillor Culhane.
For.
Councillor Fenimore.
For.
Councillor Harcourt.
For.
Councillor Harvey.
For.
Councillor Holder. Councillor Homan, Councillor Jones, Councillor Kwan, Councillor Layton, Councillor Macmillan, Councillor Morton, Councillor Murphy, Councillor Perez, Councillor Kayoum, Councillor Quigley, Councillor Rhee, Councillor Richardson, Councillor Rowbottom, Councillor Rosenberg. Councillor Sanderson. Councillor Schmidt. Councillor Sadiq. Councillor Smith. Councillor Uberoy. Councillor Umi. Councillor Vaughan. Councillor Vincent. Councillor Alford. Councillor Brocklebank Fowler. Councillor Andrew Brown. Councillor Johnson. Councillor Carmel.
Against.
Councillor Lloyd Harris.
Against.
Councillor Loveday.
Against.
Councillor Stainton.
Against.
Councillor Stanton.
Against.
Councillor Thorley.
Against.
I hereby announce the outcome of voting. 4, 33, against 9, 1 not voting. I declare the. May I have order, please? Councillor Carmel, could you please be seated? Come on. Who's that? I declare.
Could you have silence while you
make the announcement? We need some silence, please, while we're making the announcement. Councillor Carmel, you need to sit down.
Under what standing order must I be seated?
You're the one who. You ought to know.
Under which standing order,
then? Well, let us guess. Please do not interrupt us, please.
I'm not interrupting, I'm asking a question.
And I've asked you to do something before you ask the question. Councillor Brown, you need to control your colleague, please. Thank you. I declare the report and recommendations carried. Thank you.
Madam Mayor, I completely respect your authority and I do agree with the change in tone of the council. However, it surely must be allowed, as Alex was doing, to very discreetly, as our Chief Whip, talk to me and colleagues.
But I'm in the middle of reading. I'm just reading an announcement, okay. Which is very important that everybody hears what we're saying.
Okay.
Thank you. Item 6.2, four-year capital programme and capital strategy. I call upon the leader, Councillor Stephen Cowan, to formally move the report and recommendations.
Formally moved.
Is the report and recommendations agreed?
No.
Nope. Yes, Councillor Schmidt? Oh.
Sorry, my mistake. I didn't get a chance to finish my conversation because I was rudely interrupted.
You were not rudely interrupted. I was rudely interrupted. I beg your pardon.
Agreed.
Agreed. Thank you. Councillor Schmidt, sorry.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Amazing that you'd say accuse the mayor of being rude, having spent many meetings calling her Mr. Mayor. It's just absolutely incredible. But anyways, I'd like to begin my speech paying tribute because this capital finance, as much as the revenue finance, was put together by an incredible team, and I'd like to pay tribute to them individually. We've talked a lot about Hitesh today, but it deserves us to say one more time a thank you to Hitesh on his last. Capital report, his legacy will live on, as it says, for 4 more years in the 4-year capital program. So we'll think of you fondly over the next 4 years as we seek to implement it. But thank you also to Emily Hill, who's brought a lot of dynamism and new ideas since she's joined us, and we're thrilled that she's stepping up as the 151 officer. But also please pass on my congratulations and sincerest thanks to Chris Harris, Andrew Lord, Gary Ironmonger, and to all the departmental finance teams, Prakash, Tony, Gary and Kelly, Cliff and Mark. They do an incredible job, and they are a tribute once again to you, Hitesh, and now to you, Emily. Now, we just had the budget voted against by the opposition on the basis that council tax they don't think should go up, even though they couldn't give a single reason or a single thing that they would do instead, and on the basis of one saving which they said should be reinvested into public health, even though it says in bold print this saving will be reinvested into public health. So it's welcome to hear that they will now approve this capital budget, because it is an important capital budget, and I'm sure they've been through it in detail. This capital budget is the basis for funding over 1,100 social homes, the largest number of social homes to be built in this borough for many decades, and it's a tribute to Councillor Jones, Councillor Cowan, and Councillor Homan for the work that they've done to both stabilise the council stock that we inherited and now to build new social housing and new council housing. It is in desperate need, and families up and down the borough are waiting for that to be delivered, and it's absolutely necessary, and so it's important that we approve this funding. It includes £22 million of infrastructure over the next 4 years for transport, for streets, for lamp columns. All would be put at risk if the ideas, I'm sure very well thought through ideas, of the MP for Chelsea and Fulham were put into practice and the revenue required to fund that was taken away. Fortunately, they seem to have rejected that suggestion from Greg Hands, because they've approved the use of parking funds now to spend it on that street infrastructure. It enables the funding of the civic campus, which is critical. It enables the continued funding of the Education City project in White City, which a few months ago we heard passionately set out by Councillor Colhane, drawing on his experience growing up in White City and the desperate need for the types of youth services that will be delivered when Education City is built, and also a second youth centre in Sands End. It delivers funding for other schools' maintenance projects as well as for our parks. £58 million of the funding for this capital project, for this four-year capital set of projects, comes from developer contributions, won by negotiations with property speculators who previously had a green light to do what they like in this borough, but instead have been met with determined negotiation, and that has underpinned the financing of this capital program. So I commend this to the council. It is an important way that we are going to transform this borough over the coming years, providing more social housing, more space for young people, a civic campus for us all to use as residents, and an education city to make sure that those in the North Borough have the best possible future. So, Madam Mayor, I commend it to the vote.
Thank you. Any other speakers? Councillor Cowan? Agreed. Thank you. So I declare the report. So I now move to the vote. It's agreed. Oh, thank you, pardon. Sorry. Sorry. Jalali at this hour. So I declare the report recommendations carried. 6.3, Treasury Management Strategy Statement 2020-21. I call upon the Cabinet Member for Finance and Commercial Services, Councillor Max Schmidt, to formally move the report and recommendations.
Formally move.
Is the report and recommendations agreed?
No.
All right. So are there any comments, questions or amendments before putting the recommendation? I just need to check. Councillor Carmel. Are there any comments, questions or amendments before putting the recommendation to the vote? Okay. So are any speakers for this report? No one on either parties. Okay. I now move to the vote. Those in favour? Thank you. Those against? Those not voting. Mm-hmm. I hereby announce the outcome of voting for 33, not voting 10. I declare the report and recommendations carried. Thank you. 6.4, pay policy of the London Borough of Hammersmith and Fulham 2020-21. I call upon the Cabinet Member for Public Services Reform, Councillor Adam O'Connell, to formally move the report and recommendations.
Formally moved.
Thank you. Agreed.
Sorry, Madam Mayor, if I may speak on this item.
Pardon me?
If I may speak on this item, Madam Mayor.
Yes, most certainly.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, it was going to be a brief speech with some of the technical points, but given the groans from the opposition benches, I'll use the five-minute version instead. So thank you for that. Madam Mayor, I'm pleased to speak tonight on the Council's annual pay policy statement as the Cabinet Member with responsibility for our fantastic people and talent team. This is a document that every council is required to produce every year on their pay policy for the year. And this year, I'd like to draw members' attention and members of the public's attention to two key features of this year's pay policy statement. The first is the removal of two performance-related pay schemes, and the second is our investment in increasing low pay at the council. So looking first at the removal of performance-related pay schemes, we inherited a range of performance-related pay schemes when we took office in 2014 from the Conservative administration, under which performance-related pay awards and consolidated pay increases could be awarded to officers. And so far under this administration, we've been ruthlessly financially efficient and reduced the amounts that have been made available under performance-related pay to officers. However, it has been right to keep this under review, particularly in the context that we've heard about this evening, where we've lost about 60 pence in every pound of funding from central government, and fair funding is likely to dramatically affect us in the future. It's also right to review it for several other reasons. The first is our commitment to zero-based budgeting and ruthless financial efficiency, identifying long-term sustainable cost savings beyond the medium-term financial strategy and making sure that every pound we spend counts at the council. Second, because it's important to make sure that we have a competitive and affordable pay offer as part of a broad employer value proposition, and we can attract the brightest and best talent from across the UK to come and work here in Hammersmith and Fulham. I'm delighted that some of our new officers are here this evening as well. Yeah. And third, because the evidence from behavioural psychology is clear. Individuals aren't incentivised to work harder or smarter because of bonuses, and actually intrinsic motivators, such as providing meaningful work, are much more effective in motivating people. And I think people are drawn to work for us here in Hammersmith and Fulham because of our radical social democratic agenda, so powerfully set out by the leader and other colleagues earlier, and our commitment to building a compassionate council, and our dedication to creating opportunity and improving life chances for everyone in this borough through our world-leading industrial strategy. So this administration has therefore removed two performance-related pay schemes with effect from April 2020, with the remaining five under review in the next financial year. Now, I recognise that changing terms and conditions, particularly when it comes to reward, is challenging, and I'd like to say thank you to every single officer at the council who has been affected by these changes, each of whom agreed to the new terms and conditions that have been proposed. And in doing so, they have contributed to reducing controllable pay inflation over the next 4 years by £4.7 million, wow, ensuring we will have more resources available than we would otherwise have done to invest in frontline services and to keep council tax low for our borough's residents. Now, we've also heard from the leader tonight about the terrible damage caused to society by 10 years of Conservative-led rule, including the devastating rise in child poverty that we've seen in this country over the last decade that has led to an extra 500,000 children living in poverty. Shockingly, though, two-thirds of children who live in poverty in this country are living in working households. And for these children, work has not been a route out of poverty. And so it's therefore vital for us that, as well as controlling pay at the top, we also do everything we can to support the lowest paid people working in Hammersmith and Fulham, recognising as well that many of our employees are also our borough's residents. And so I'm delighted that this year the lowest paid 600 workers in Hammersmith and Fulham received a 3.2% pay increase, well ahead of inflation. And Madam Mayor, we should also be proud that under this Labour administration, this council has become an accredited London Living Wage employer, guaranteeing that we pay every single employee of this council at least £2 per hour more than the national living wage. And so to summarise, Madam Mayor, this administration is committed to fair pay for our employees, controlling pay at the top and investing in pay at the bottom, while ensuring we provide meaningful careers, opportunities for personal development and growth for all through our world-class learning and development programmes and apprenticeship schemes. And in doing so, we're creating an organisation that people want to come and work for and that people who work here are proud to be part of. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Councillor. I now move to the vote. Those in favour? What? Those against? All okay.
So that's what I asked.
Oh, okay. I declare the report and recommendations carried. 6.5, Members' Allowances Scheme 2020.
Agreed.
Agreed. I declare the report.
Formally moved.
Formally moved. Okay. Is the report and recommendations agreed?
Yes.
Speakers. Okay. Who wishes to speak? Councillor Culhane. Pardon me? Councillor Murphy?
Thank you very much, Madam Mayor. Yeah. This is about council's allowances in many ways, isn't it? And I suppose we have to ask ourselves the question, how do we measure the value for money that we as councillors are getting? Yeah? How do we measure it? Well, I suppose one measure might be meeting attendance. Yes. That might be one measure.
Yes. Yes.
And we all remember the council meeting when seven members of the opposition turned up, the so-called Magnificent Seven. A couple then departed and we were left with a famous five. Two more went and we were left with Fun Boy Three. If one more had gone, we'd have been left with Dumber and Dumber. But soon, at other council meetings, you know, at other council meetings, we have members who actually contribute. We have from the opposition more heckling than we have speeches. Good grief, and now we have a walkout. One out to all our comrades. Please, is it a trade union party? Have you left? Have you gone on strike? Don't you want to earn your allowances? Shouldn't we cut them, we ask ourselves? What is happening here? Oh, sorry.
Councillor Murphy, would you like to continue?
Well, thank you very much, Madam Mayor. I'm not sure what happened there. Did we hit the heartbeat of the Tory party? Did we point out that perhaps there are one or two failings that they might have come along with? That tonight, on the most important night, the budget night, only one of them could be bothered to speak, and he turned up late? What is this party that we have opposite? Or don't have opposite? Or don't have opposite? Obviously, a vacuum has been created. Do you know, I sit on two committees, and we have co-optees on the committee, five in total, one of whom is a former Tory councillor, which just goes to show that we are, I suppose the word, ecumenical in our approach to politics. We are the living embodiment of working across political parties. And at each one of those committees that I'm a member of, the co-optees have asked more pertinent questions and given more good ideas than the opposition. I would say than the opposition opposite, but I would just say than the opposition. It's unbelievable their lack of impact and lack of interest in attending and making comments. And I have to say that kind of on an individual basis, and I have to admit this, and it's sometimes difficult for Labour people to admit, that I do quite like some of the opposition members. But I'm sorry. But collectively, I'm sorry. They quite appall me, and sometimes I wonder, when they're all sitting together, if a bright idea came into their skulls, it would be called a space invader. I just don't know what is happening with these people. So let me just move my speech on a little bit there. Yeah?
Maybe to the end.
Maybe to the end, yeah? And I know it's difficult for the opposition, but to have a leader who can't even be bothered to turn up to some of the packs, who can't even be bothered to read the papers before they come into the council, it is an embarrassment, an absolute embarrassment. And we would love them to become an effective opposition. Democracy demands that we have an effective opposition. But if the most effective that they can be is to walk out of a meeting, what are they here for? What are they here for? Thank you very much.
Thank you. I declare the report and recommendation. Oh, sorry, Councillor Culhane. Wish to speak?
Sorry for keeping you. Oh, sorry, they're not there. Sorry for keeping them late anyway if they're still in the building. Madam Mayor, I wasn't going to renew the annual tradition of me getting up and speaking on this item, but I think actually now it's quite pertinent that I do so. Actually, because this time last week, Councillor Holder and to be fair, Councillor Loveday, were at Corporate Parenting Board, which I'll come back onto. But a week later, we come here to discuss the budget, which, in a council where most of the power lies in the cabinet, which has its own checks and balances, this is arguably the most important full council of the year. And we heard a 40-minute speech from the leader setting out in some great detail about how fantastic this budget is, considering the context in which it's set. And that's not a surprise. We're obviously going to celebrate our own budget, which has been worked on terrifically by Councillor Schmid and colleagues, led by Hitesh and Emily as well. And my personal thanks to them for doing everything they can to protect the budgets of children's services, which is we're all very grateful for. So 40 minutes on that. And I think it's telling that everyone here in this room, I'm lucky that I live and work in the borough I love, but I know that people have to work all over London and they all manage to get here on time. And the one meeting of the year where you get unlimited time to scrutinise the people you seek to boot out of office, the Leader of the Opposition turned up half an hour late and gave a speech which gave a speech which, if I'm being generous, was 10 minutes. A 10-minute speech for such a detailed budget set out in many, many pages. And I don't know what notes anyone else took, but there wasn't a single recommendation of what could be done differently in this budget. Not one thing that could be improved on. I mean, credit to Greg Smith, now MP for Buckinghamshire, at least he had the idea of replacing Meals on Wheels with Tesco deliveries. However ludicrous that was, at least it was an idea. And my word, what we'd give to go back there now. Now, the reason I mentioned Corporate Parenting Board at the start is we've just seen the opposition walk out after, what, having been here, the Leader of the Opposition being here for 75 minutes, we've had not one point on the budget, and the total amount of taxpayers' money that is spent on that totals £125,556. And I can tell you, Madam Mayor, when Councillor Holder and I were sat there with our children in care and care leavers last Wednesday, they came up with any number of ways of how we could make our services better for them. So I just wanted to make that point, that in the space of a week, I've gone from having some of our most vulnerable children in the borough making points about how we can make things better for our kids that we're all responsible for, not just for them, but for all of the other young people in care as well and who have left care. And here we are a week later, and I'm currently making a speech to no one. At the Budget Council, Madam Mayor. You know, we've heard other things as well, groaning at speeches about pay policies. I mean, they're the Conservatives, Madam Mayor. I thought this was their bread and butter, changing pay policies. And we've heard groaning speeches about that. No attendance at finance packs. The Leader of the Opposition not on a pack. Harwood Terrace, a big issue. Only one person attended the public meeting on it last week, in addition to Victoria Brocklebank Fowler. I'm not even going to go into the surgeries and the ratio of surgeries per councillor. Oh, we've heard God. That much. Okay. Well, actually, Madam Mayor, forgive me, it's slightly back of a bag packet, but roughly the Tories do about 50 a year divided by 11 is just over 4 per councillor per year. On our side, not taking into account surgeries by appointment, it's 350 divided by 35, just under 10. I remember in 2018 at the council election in the town hall, I said goodbye to Steve Hamilton quite sadly, actually, because he was on the pack that I chaired. And whilst we would disagree on many things, I always genuinely appreciated his opinion. And along with Councillor Dewhurst, they did actually help us shape policy. I remember particularly 20 miles an hour. They were a very helpful one. Critical friends, you could say. And I did think I would miss them, but I didn't think I'd miss them this much. Because as I say, Madam Mayor, a week ago we were talking with our children in care and care leavers about how we can make things better, about what's not working, what could work better. And a week later, I'm stood in front of a set of empty desks. And I think it's just worth making that point, because as Steve said, democracy is not a one-way street. It's two ways, and let's just hope that their new way of working involves some actual opposition.
Thank you, Councillor. Councillor Quigley, you wish to speak.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I actually wasn't planning on speaking tonight because I gave two speeches at the last meeting, and I didn't come last night. I'm absolutely shocked, actually, what I've just seen. I didn't realise, PJ, that you were that scary, that you made people walk out. Size is not everything. Look at me. I didn't know we were that scary. I'm very disappointed and very shocked at the opposition for what they've done. We are here to represent the residents of this borough. Doesn't matter what political party you're in, we're here on behalf of the residents. They voted us in. They have a duty to be in an effective opposition. And what they've done tonight is absolutely disgusting. I am so shocked and actually quite angry at them. I'm on the finance pack with PJ. The Tory councillor didn't turn up at the last meeting. I mean, you know, we're here to represent our community. How can you do it if you're not going to go into a room? If you're not going to sit down at a table and communicate with each other, what can you achieve? So I'm just shocked. I'm 18 months in the job, and I can't believe what I've seen. I mean, we can laugh at it, but actually, I'm quite angry. I'm angry on behalf of the residents that they've done this. They are not doing their job, and they should be absolutely ashamed of themselves. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is the report agreed? I declare the report and recommendations carried. Item 6.6, Council Calendar 2020 to 21. call upon the leader, Councillor Stephen Cowan, to formally move the report and recommendations.
Formally moved.
Is the report and recommendations agreed?
Agreed.
I declare the report and recommendations carried. That concludes the business for tonight's council meeting.